Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor Stock Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. By the way, thanks for hanging out with us in the afternoon. We appreciate that very much. If you have any ideas, suggestions, or comments for the program, please send them to requests@theunionedge.com. requests@theunionedge.com. And I promise you, we will read them. We may not answer them, but we will read them. And that's okay if you want to say I dress funny. That's, you know, I got broad shoulders and thick skin. I can take it. Right now, we're talking with Mark Dudzik, National Coordinator for Single Payer. Mark, welcome to Union Edge.
Hey, great to be here, Charles.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Mark, you know, I got to tell you, I am a huge fan of single payer health care. You know, I'm ex-military. You know, we had a base clinic for, you know, military members and for their families. And, you know, you didn't necessarily get the same doctor all the time, but you got high quality care. Did you get a private room in the military? Maybe, maybe not. Depends upon the hospital, you know, what the load's like. But you got quality care, and it was cradle to grave. And, you know, I think if it's good enough for our – wait a second. Somebody, I think, just called that socialized medicine. I'm not sure, but that's okay. If it's good enough for our military members, why isn't it good enough for the rest of the country?
Well, that's the question that we're trying to answer, Charles. I mean, this is, you know, something that every other industrialized country in the world has figured out, that healthcare ought to be a fundamental human right, and it ought to be treated like a public good, the way we treat schools and fire protection and libraries and, you know, things that everybody needs access to, and that can't be very well provided equally and equitably through kind of market mechanisms. So, you know, single payer is not a particularly radical idea, but it is an idea whose time has come. The healthcare system in the U.S. is in, you know, complete dysfunction. It costs twice as much as any other country in the world for care that is not particularly that great when you compare it to other countries. And, you know, it's the biggest driver of personal and family bankruptcies and financial crisis. And for unions, and our group is, you know, works within the labor movement, for unions it's been the biggest cause of strikes, lockouts, and concession bargaining for the last 30 years. You know, our position is we've got to get health care off the bargaining table and make it a right for everyone in America.
Right. And quite frankly, that making it for everybody, you know, there are still people out there say, oh, look at those greedy union people. Yeah, they want health care coverage for everybody.
Right.
So, Mark, talk to me a little bit about, I know there's a number of different plans, but if we went to a single payer health care system, okay, I'm going to toss this one out there. First of all, there's not going to be any death panels, okay? No death panels, folks. Sorry. Michelle Bachmann's going to have to find something else to talk about. But, you know, what would be the cost for, let's say, my employer, and what would be my, you know, my kick-in for that?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, you're right about the whole death panel stuff. I mean, the thing about single payer is it's not socialized medicine in the way that some people would envision it. It basically just says that you know, the government finances healthcare through some system of progressive taxation and pays for it through a single payer, through you know, government, the way that we pay for Medicare for people over 65, and then that all medical decisions are made, you know, between you and your healthcare provider, that your provider is actually free from all of the crazy private insurance requirements that, you know, you have to call some bureaucrat in some insurance company office, often not even in the U.S. anymore, to get approval for medically necessary care. So that's really the difference. Now, in terms of how much would it cost, I mean, as you said, there's a number of different schemes, but, you know, basically most plans, including H.R. 676, which is Congressman Conyers' bill that's been in Congress since 2003 and is sort of the flagship national single-payer bill, most plans would finance it primarily through a employer payroll tax with a smaller employee payroll tax and then a series of progressive income taxes on the super rich and on stock trading and you know, other kind of antisocial behaviors that happen. So you know, like the Conyers plan would say that workers would pay a 3% payroll tax. So if you're talking about a, you know, a worker, working family making around the average of $50,000 a year, you're talking about a $1,500 additional tax for those workers. Now, you know, it also calls for a plan with no co-pays, no deductibles, and no out-of-pocket costs.
Right.
So almost every family in America, in the bottom 99%, would pay less and way less for health care that would be guaranteed from birth until death, you know, whether you work or don't work, you lose your job, you change your job, your kid maxes out of your insurance, everybody would be covered as a matter of right and as an American.
Right. And it's a wonderful thing. You know, Mark, I got to tell you, when I was stationed over in Germany, they have a very similar thing. And, you know, it having been there for a while, one of the things I thought was just the neatest thing in the world was, you know, every year you get a physical. Okay. And that's paid for through the health care coverage thing. And what happens is the person at the local scheduling office, they find out when, you know, there's an opening for a physical and when you're due. And they schedule that, and they call your boss and say, hey, Mark's going to be at the doctor's office on Tuesday. Please make whatever arrangements you need to make. And then you get a phone call at home saying, hey, Mark, on Tuesday we've got an appointment for you to get your physical. Please be at this location at that time. Mm-hmm. And if you miss that one, the Krankenschwester or the nurse or whoever's scheduling this, well, a little bit more forcefully remind you of your next, and you're gonna show up for your physical, and you're gonna get your physical, and if you need anything, they're gonna schedule those tests and so on and so forth. It works real well.
Yeah, it's amazing what you could do if you ran a healthcare system to benefit its participants rather than to make profit.
Right, and let me tell you something else. You know, one of the other things about this that's really interesting is, you know, there's people out there, well, you know, I can't get that specialized care I might want. Well, look, if you want a facelift, you know, you can get it. They've got doctors there that'll do it. Yeah. Now, you're not going to get it done on the taxpayer's dime.
Right.
But you can get it done. And so it's a good system. People don't fall through the cracks. We give it to the military here and military families here in the United States, especially when they're serving overseas. So, I mean, why? Oh, I know, because the insurance companies are going to make a bunch of money, huh?
Yeah, well, there's a huge medical industrial complex, Charles. Insurance is right at the center of it, but that's not the only ones. I mean, it's the biggest, most profitable industry in the history of capitalism.
Absolutely.
And, you know. That's why it's so hard. I mean, there's nothing magical about this. It's not that people don't have good ideas about how to build a better healthcare system. Almost everybody from President Obama on down will agree that a single-payer system is the best system if you want to cover everybody at a cost we can all afford.
Absolutely. So Mark, listen.
Why don't we have it?
Mark,
and
listen.
That's because of the power of these corporations that are blocking real change. That's
absolutely
why labor is so important.
Mark, we got to get going, brother. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah, glad to come back anytime, Charles.
Fantastic. I'm Charles Showalter. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
I make learning a privilege, not a chore, and frustration a tool, not an obstacle. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Make more. Teach. Visit teach.org. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
Sisters and brothers, are you buried in paperwork? UnionTrack is a software platform that streamlines your administrative work so you can spend less time chasing databases and more time taking care of your members. UnionTrack was created to streamline your day-to-day operations, allowing you to focus on organizing, training, and advocating for working families. More information is available at UnionTrack.com and on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.
Hi, I'm Al Roker. Let me tell you what's happening in your neck of the woods. Right now, 1 in 6 Americans don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are our neighbors, friends, our coworkers, but we can do something about it. Visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find the local food bank in your community. I'm Al Roker, and together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
When Dad needed help getting around, I became his driver. Soon enough, it was up to me to be his housekeeper and financial manager, too. When he moved in, I became his cook and even his nurse. But no matter what roles I play, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the roles you play. So to help, we created aarp.org/caregiving, where you can connect with experts and other caregivers. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate that very much. Please go to our website, theunionedge.com. Download the free app for your iPhone or your Android. You can listen to the program live, or you can listen to the podcast if you miss the show. We appreciate it. It does a lot of other neat things, but that's another story. Meantime, we are talking with Ben Vecti, who is with Social Security Works. Ben, welcome back to the Union Edge.
Thank you so much, Charles.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Ben, you know, unfortunately, our Republican friends, some of our Republican friends have already laid into Social Security, calling it the greatest evil that's going to crush the American capitalist society, or something along those lines. But long and short of it is, it's a well-run program. It does a lot of great things for people. I mean, Paul Ryan, you know, he benefited from it when he was a younger man. Many of our disabled American veterans returning from Afghanistan and Iraq, they need it. Senior citizens, other people. It can be solvent very easily. Take away the caps, do some other things, expand it out. We're getting a lot of pushback. What should we be doing?
Well, you know, things like your show are a great beginning. Basically, we need to just communicate with the American people and keep talking to the American people. You know, and because of all the weakening of campaign finance legislation over the last, you know, 20, 30 years, it's become such a disconnect between what the American people think and what Congress does. But the ultimate check on that is the elections. You know, every 2 years, we have elections where politicians are forced to go back to their district and actually hold town halls, talk to voters. And when they do that, they always hear about Social Security and how important it is to the voters. So it's important that we keep, and also the voters themselves are receiving a lot of disinformation because so many media outlets are either co-opted by, through private ownership of the media, or they get content that they run, that they receive from major outlets without questioning it. There's a lot of money invested in a disinformation campaign around Social Security to tell media and tell the American public that it's going bankrupt. So that
And you know, let me ask you about this disinformation program that's out there. Okay. You're saying there's a lot of money invested in, but I've never seen an ad saying, oh, Social Security is the root of all evil in the United States. I don't think anybody else has either. But I But I will tell you, I am 51 years old, and I know that when I was a young man, I heard people telling me back then, Social Security is not going to be around. It's the same message that's been that's going on today.
Right. They started in the 1980s, and it's led primarily by Pete Peterson, to some extent the Koch brothers. But primarily Pete Peterson, the Peterson Foundation, he donated $1 billion to create a foundation which claims to care about fiscal responsibility, but the only thing they want to cut is social spending. They're not concerned about defense spending, and they're not concerned about tax expenditures that help corporate America. They want to cut social spending. What you do see are a lot of ad campaigns about balancing the budget. They do that around the country. They do speaking tours around the country where they pay for people to go around the country and tell opinion leaders that we should be balancing the budget. And they do they write college textbooks. They create content that goes into college textbooks, and they buy the space for the college textbooks, which tells people that we have to balance the budget. And when they give people options for how to balance the budget, cutting Social Security is always figured prominently in those. So it's kind of an indirect approach, but it's because they know if they take it head on, people react negatively. But that's when they set up the austerity frame, and they can their approach is if they tell people that they're going to get nothing when they retire, then people will be happy to take, say, a 30% cut in benefits because they think that's better than getting nothing. So we have to make people aware of the fact that they have earned their benefits. They should get 100% of their benefits, and it's just a question of funding the system properly.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, well, let's talk about the cap, dropping the cap at, what, 144,000?
118.5 this year, 118.5.
Okay. Get rid of the cap. What does that do for Social Security?
Oh, it does a tremendous amount. It would eliminate probably about 80% of the shortfall over the next 75 years.
Okay, Ben, let me get you to explain. And I apologize to this, folks. I did not ask Ben what the heck the cap is and why we should get rid of it. Ben, is the cap and why should we get rid of it?
That myself. Well, right now, if you make more than $118,000 a year, then you pay Social Security contributions, your FICA taxes, only until you've earned that much. So say if you make $1 million a year, you'll pay FICA until maybe February or March. After that, you don't pay any more Social Security contributions. It's not deducted from your paycheck. You're scot-free, and you're not paying any more into the system because we have a cap on income for contributions into Social Security. The end result of that is that somebody who makes $40,000 a year pays 6.2% of all of their income into Social Security, and somebody who makes $1 million a year only pays maybe a 1%, 2% of that $1 million of income into Social Security. So, you know, millionaires have a lower contribution rate than average workers. And there's no reason for that. You know, if someone makes $1 million a year, they can afford to pay 6.2% all year, just like the person who makes $40,000 a year does. In fact,
How did it happen that the rich in this country got out of paying for Social Security?
Well, back in 1935, the assumption was that there would be a robust defined benefit pension system through employers. That was developing at the time. It was thought in people at that time, people worked for the same company for their entire careers, and the thought was that the private sector would pick up the slack there. But as you know, as we all know, that defined benefit pensions are disappearing, even for union members. They're being converted into defined contribution pensions, 401ks, where people have no guarantee of anything. And as a result, we need to expand Social Security now, not cut it back, and we need to make sure that people, that the wealthy pay as well.
There you go. So if we did away with the cap and we made everybody pay the same amount percentage-wise into Social Security, we'd be golden for the next 75 years.
Well, yeah, we would be able to, pretty much. I mean, for certainly for the next 60 years and possibly for the next 75. So it's a no-brainer, really. It's a straightforward solution. People can afford it. You know, if you're making that much money, you can certainly afford to pay that on your entire, you know, if somebody making 40 grand can afford to pay 6.2%, so can a millionaire. And you know what? Even if you're making $1 million a year right now, you have no guarantee that you're going to be making that your whole career. Some people are make a lot of money for a few years, and then they go bankrupt or something. I know people who've done that. And then they end up retiring. Maybe they leverage themselves to start a business or something. They end up retiring. They may have made $1 million for a year or two, but then they end up being poor in old age. I mean, everyone needs Social Security. It's insurance. It's kind of like fire insurance. You know, when your house burns down, you need that money to rebuild. When you retire, there's no guarantee that you're going to have a lot of private savings, even if you made a lot of money for a few years. So people should be paying in, regardless of their income, paying the full amount in, so that when they retire, they can have a decent standard of living.
It's pretty simple for me.
Yeah, now, straightforward.
What else can we do to shore up Social Security?
Well, there's some other options. There's some loopholes right now in the contribution structure. For example, you know, people don't pay FICA contributions on things like, you know, when you get a commuting allowance at work, or, you know, cafeteria plans give you, some people get money for commuting and things like that. That money is deducted prior to Social Security contributions. So there are a few small loopholes. A bigger thing we could do, though, is simply increase the contribution rate from 6.2%, say, to 7%, so that we all pay a little bit more in. But that would add to the system's finances and shore it up. And polls show that workers across the spectrum, across the political spectrum, across the income spectrum, are all willing to pay a little bit more in if they knew that would make it guarantee the system's funding. But you know what opponents of Social Security want to do, Charles, is cut the system as a whole. They don't want to shore it up. They talk about the shortfall because not to as a prelude to trying to shore it up, but what their vision is, the Peterson Foundation and others, is to cut back Social Security, to say it has financial challenges, use that as an excuse to cut it back, and then force everyone to put more money to 401ks. Because what that would do is create a lot of profit on Wall Street think about it, $800 billion a year is contributed into Social Security from American workers. If you took all of that money and contributed it into the 401k system, Wall Street would make a tremendous profit off that every year, buying and selling people's stocks, making commissions, and then when people retired, they would get a fraction of what they contributed because a lot of that money would have been skimmed off by Wall Street. That's why it's important to do whatever we can to shore up the system, expand benefits. As like I said before, we have, you know, the defined benefit pensions are disappearing. People need more money than they used to need from Social Security because they're not getting it from their employer. So we need to shore the system's finances up and expand benefits.
Is that why we hear many in the private sector saying, well, if we can't make a profit off of it, if we can't privatize it, we should get rid of it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, one of the primary donors to political campaigns these days is Wall Street, both personally and through the banks themselves giving contributions, both hard money and soft money. And they have a tremendous vested interest in privatizing Social Security. And they've been giving money every election cycle for the last, you know, 20 or 30 years, pushing hard. They tried hard in 2005 to eliminate Social Security, and they're going to keep trying.
There you go. Ben, is there anything else we need to be aware of?
Well, this year there's an attempt by Republicans in Congress to gut the disability SSDI system, Social Security Disability Insurance, which is a big part of Social Security. It's a very important part, especially for workers. An estimated 1 in 4 20-year-olds will end up needing a disability before they turn 67. 1 in 4, especially people who work in physically demanding jobs. And they're trying to cut back disability benefits. And if they do that, it could really hurt a lot of workers as they get into their 50s and 60s, and some of them have to go on DI. So it's important that we all tell our representatives that we're opposed to that.
Ben, how do we find out more about you and Social Security Works?
SocialSecurityWorks.org is our website, SocialSecurityWorks.org. There's a ton of information there, both about the program and about what you can do.
Fantastic. We appreciate it. Meantime, we got to get going. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.